The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for getting up so early on a Sunday to listen in. It's a cold Sunday, as you probably know if you haven't looked outside, and it's going to be getting colder here in Columbus. It's, I think it's in the 19 range and going down to 8 degrees. Pretty soon we won't have 2 degrees to rub together. About 3 weeks ago or so, I gave out a question of the day, and then I forgot to give the answer, so we're going to go with that question again, which I'll give out in a minute. This is the last Sunday before Christmas, so I won't see anybody before now, or rather before next Sunday, so everyone have a great Christmas between now and when we come back on the air, and we'll meet here again on the air, on the radio, next Sunday morning at 9. I want to recognize, or what am I trying to say, congratulate the basketball Buckeyes on their win yesterday. They're now 8-0, and we wish a speedy recovery to David Lighty. It was nice to see the team manage to win without him, but we do miss him. We hope he gets well soon. And also, I want to wish Jim Tressel and the OSU football team good luck as they get ready for their January 5th Fiesta Bowl game. Kind of exciting times around here in Columbus. And today's show is going to be about dental implants. And on us with the phone, on the phone with us is a Dr. Kelly from North Carolina. I'm going to get to Dr. Kelly here in a minute and introduce him. But before I do, let me go ahead and give that question of the day. Those of you that listen regularly will remember it. You might remember I didn't give the answer, but we will cover that here. Actually, now that I think about it, I think that we're going to go with a different question. We're going to go with, what percent of all U.S. dentists offer nitrous oxide sedation? I'm going to save that one, and you'll find out why down the road. But anyway, what percent of all U.S. dentists offer nitrous oxide sedation? Our number is 821-1230, or you can send an email. You can send your guest by email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is we're going to get on to the show. The show is going to be about implants, and we have a Dr. Andrew Kelly. He is from North Carolina, Clemens, North Carolina. And Dr. Kelly is a graduate of California State University, Long Beach, and received his Doctor of Dental Surgery degree from Howard University. He received his advanced implant training from the Corvent Institute in Encino, California, and the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, Georgia. He is a diplomat of the American Board of Oral Implantology, an associate fellow of the American Academy of Implant Dentistry, a fellow of the American Academy of General Dentistry, a member of the International Congress of Oral Implantology, the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, and the Academy of Osseointegration. Dr. Kelly is a published author, and he is a product evaluator for a number of leading dental implant-related companies. He was the dental director at Venser Hospital in Los Angeles, California. He has lectured on dental implants, history of dental implants, treatment planning, risk assessment, case planning, hands-on surgical, hands-on prosthetic, incorporating dental implants into your practice, CamLog dental implant system, recall maintenance, treatment acceptance, case selection, bone grafting, site development, and cosmetic dentistry. He owns and operates Cosmetic Dental Center, a private cosmetic and implant dental practice. Dr. Kelly was featured on the cover of Dentistry Today as a leader in continuing education. He is also co-owner of Dental Office Solutions, a dental staffing, consulting, and training center for cosmetic and implant education. Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for getting up early and being with me on the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
And actually, after reading that bio, I'm in awe. When do you have time to sleep?
sometimes I don't. If you notice, I emailed you at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Actually, I did notice that, and I do appreciate it. And you might have noticed I emailed you right back.
Yes, you did.
Which means I was up, too.
Great minds don't sleep much.
I guess not. So this is like a meeting of the insomniacs, right?
Yes, I think so.
Now, Dr. Kelly, I do want to ask you, by the way, Dr. Kelly's website is www.ncdentalimplants.com, and I wanted to ask you, how can you do these implants at no charge?
Well,
doesn't the NC stand for no charge?
No, that is North Carolina.
Are you sure? No, I think it's
so.
No charge. Everybody go to that website and get your free implants from Dr. Kelly.
I wish. If we could do it for free sometimes, I think we would. But we have to get paid so we can continue to provide excellent service to our patients.
Right. And, you know, excellence in dentistry is very important to me, as I know it is to you.
Yes.
And, We enjoy having guests on, and you know, the majority of dentists are out there doing absolutely the best thing for their patients, but we all know there are some that aren't, and what we're trying to do is make sure my listeners, hopefully our patients, know the difference.
Yeah.
So, I know you do a lot of implants, you incorporate them into your practice, you make sure they're a big part of the cosmetic dentistry that you do there, and so let me just start off by asking you, what are the advantages of dental implants over conventional bridges? And maybe you should explain to our listeners what a conventional bridge is first.
A conventional bridge is actually called a fixed partial denture, and it requires the dentist to reduce the adjacent teeth.
That's so a nice word for grind on.
Yeah, you have to grind down the tooth. In other words, if you're missing one tooth, you have to turn a one-tooth problem into a three-tooth problem.
Right.
And, you know, when you do that, you make the teeth more susceptible to decay, and sometimes the teeth are sensitive, and, you know, just things can happen. Sometimes those teeth that are ground down for the conventional bridge require root canal. So anytime you do something to a tooth, it increases its susceptibility to other problems. So by using dental implants, you prevent most of those problems. So if you put an implant in, you no longer have to grind the adjacent teeth down.
Okay. And is it one implant, or is it two, or is it three, is it four? I mean, let's say I'm missing my four front teeth on the lower. Would you recommend that I get four implants, or would you recommend that I get two and a bridge across them?
Well, it depends on the amount of available bone, but in the lower front, you'd probably be better off getting two implants and getting a bridge. I mean, the implant would maintain the bone for you, but sometimes putting too many implants together can create problems as well. So we have to be aware of, you know, what we're doing, because you can't put an implant any more than 3 millimeters next to another one. So you have to have 3 millimeters between implants and at least a millimeter and a half between an implant and a natural tooth.
Okay, so what you're saying is there's really, oftentimes there's not enough room to do individual teeth, so an implant-supported bridge then is a better solution.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the implants, do you remember, like, how long have implants been actually available, widespread use in dentistry? I know that the early studies were done in the early 70s, both human and baboon trials, but it seems to me that it wasn't until about maybe, 10 years ago that the success rate shot way up, and they're just very, very prevalent and easily accessible now. Am I right on that?
Pretty close there. I think it's implants have been around. The root form implants, which are the most successful, have been around since the mid-80s. But unfortunately, the implants work fine, but we couldn't get the crowns to stay on them properly. And it has been within the last 10, 15 years that we've gotten the crown part of the implants to work well.
Okay. All right. Now, I know that when you talked about the amount of bone, and you talked about the amount of bone between teeth, but What about cases where there just isn't enough bone? And you also said something very important that I think maybe we need to expand on a little bit. You mentioned how the implant maintains the bone, and I'm going to have you explain that to my listeners. But so besides the implant maintaining the bone, what happens if you come to a time where a place where you want to place an implant, but there's really not enough bone? What do you do?
Well, right now we have several technologies available to us. Historically, or in the past, what we've done is we've had to take bone from the hip or the chin or some other sources, and it hasn't worked out really well. But what we've been able to do is we've been able to now harvest bone that has been donated, and that donor bone can now be used to act as a scaffold for the patient so that their own bone will replace it. Also, there's a new technology where bone is being grown with different proteins. One of them is called bone morphogenic protein, but we're moving even further along, and now we can grow bone with mesenchymal stem cells.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
And that's the kind of thing you would find in the umbilical cord blood, am I right?
Well, those are embryonic stem cells.
Okay.
But actually, all humans have mesenchymal stem cells. Those mesenchymal stem cells are those cells in your body that allow your body to repair itself. So there are two ways of getting them. You can draw a patient's blood and spin that blood down and extract the stem cells from the patient's own blood, or you can get it from a source, and you can get it so that another person has donated stem cells so that they could be utilized for that purpose.
Okay. Now, I do want to also ask you, you mentioned the bone, and I get asked this all the time, where does the bone come from? And then we both know it's either bovine or cow bone, and
yes,
and also demineralized human bone. And so, what would you say to a person that, first of all, is afraid of having demineralized bone? Oh, and by the way, the caller on the line, please hang on, we will get to you. It might have to be after the break, but we'll be with you here soon. You know, I've had people ask me, is that safe? I don't know if I want cow bone in me, or I don't know if I want human cadaver bone in me. What would you say to them, or what do you say to them? I imagine you do this every day.
Well, what I've said to them, and what I continue to say, is it is very safe, and I've actually done several bone grafts on family members, so I wouldn't expose my family members to that, but I've also been to some processing centers where I've seen them process the bone, and all of the cells are removed, so there's no zero potential for transmitting disease in these bone products, especially the cow bone. The cow bone is cow bone. It's really difficult to transmit diseases from one species to another, but based on the way they process it by using different chemicals, and also they irradiate the bone, so there's nothing left.
Right. I mean, I believe it's safe, and I know you know it's safe, and I think that's, you have to be complimented for actually visiting this site where they process the bone. I think that shows integrity and compassion and a lot of care. I compliment you for that. That's great.
Thank you. And one more thing, I've actually done a bone graft on my wife. And
oh, yeah.
Trust me, we don't do things on our wives that don't work out well.
That's probably the most glowing reason. I think that's actually funny. Okay, now, so the technologies to grow bone are using the mesenchymal stem cells.
Yes.
And then what about, you have similar, there are similar technologies for soft tissue for implant dentistry? I mean, I guess what I'm referring to, would that be collagen, you know, to stop the invagination of the soft tissue after an extraction, for example?
Right. You can use collagen there, a collagen plug, but you can grow soft tissue by, it's called guided tissue regeneration. That's the technical term for it. And it can be done a number of ways. The most popular is by, like you said, using a collagen membrane over a wound and getting it to grow. But there are other things that can happen as well. There are other chemicals, for lack of a better word, and one of them is called platelet-derived growth factor. And the way we get that is by drawing blood from the patient
right.
and spinning it down and then putting that top layer on the skin, and that stimulates the soft tissue to grow.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty neat process. And spinning it down, you mean in a centrifuge?
In a centrifuge, yes.
We have to go to a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to take our caller on line one. I want to reiterate the question of the day, and the reason I switched questions on the listeners, I said you'd understand later, is the answer to this question came directly from Dr. Kelly's website, so he's going to know the answer to this, and if he doesn't, he's going to look it up real quick while we're on our break. But anyway, the question was, what percent of all U.S. dentists provide nitrous oxide sedation to their patients? Our number is 821-1230. Email address is dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. And you're listening to Dentally Speaking here with Dr. Kvitko. We'll be right back after the break.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling.
Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but We're Too Numb to Ask. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. And on the show with me today is Dr. Andrew Kelly. Dr. Kelly practices in North Carolina. And, His website is www.ncdentalimplants.com, which I teased him about stands for No Charge Dental Implants, but he assured me it stands for North Carolina Dental Implants. So, Dr. Kelly, we have a caller we're going to go to here in just a second. Before I do, let me just give out, did you look up, do you know the answer to the question of the day? If you do, don't tell me yet, or if you don't remember, give me your guess. What's your guess on the question of the day?
Oh, my guess?
Yes. Unless you know for sure.
I do know for sure.
Okay, you better not guess then.
Okay.
Ron called in a guess of 80%. Candy called in a guess of 95%. And the question is, what percent of U.S. dentists, all U.S. dentists, offer nitrous oxide sedation? So, okay. Our caller, Nathan, on line one. You're on Talk 1230 WYTS. What's your question?
My question is, what's like the healing time when you get a... If you get an implant, doesn't that have to take a while to heal in before it's completed, or is it just done and you're finished with it?
Oh, and before I let Dr. Kelly answer that, do you have a guess for our question of the day?
Yeah, I want to guess maybe 70%.
70% is Nathan's guess. Write that down, Tom. We'll see if he wins the prize. I'm actually teasing because there is no prize, but other than getting to know that you were right. But so, Dr. Kelly, what would your answer be?
For the length of time for the number of dentists providing oral
for healing time.
Healing
he said
time.
Getting
okay.
an implant. He said he heard it takes a while to heal.
Well, it depends on a number of factors. One of the biggest being your age and how healthy you are. Also, the number varies, but some averages are 3 months at the bottom, 4 months at the top.
Meaning the lower arch is 3 months. If
yes.
it's a lower arch implant, you wait 3 months for healing, and if it's an upper arch, you wait 6 months, correct?
Or 4 months.
Oh, 4 months.
4 months. The times have come down. The implant systems have improved. I mean, if you're, and here's the other thing, if you've had to do a graft, like a sinus lift and a bone graft, which we haven't really discussed, but if you've done some kind of grafting procedure, the time is 6 months.
And those are actually on my list of questions I'll be asking here in a bit. So 6 months if you've done a sinus lift.
Yes.
Okay. So does that answer your question, Nathan?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Okay. So why don't we go ahead and discuss sinus lifting? Let me see First of all, Dr. Kelly, do you do the sinus lifting right in your office?
Yes, I do.
And do you place the implant at the same time?
In some cases, if there is sufficient bone left. So in other words, there is the sinus is like a hollow, it's a hollow tube, basically, and it's lined with some tissue, and that's called the sinus membrane or the Snyderian membrane.
I can never say that word. You did very well at it.
And what we do, a sinus lift is simply lifting that Snyderian membrane, placing some bone grafting material under it, and allowing that bone graft material to mature into bone that we can place an implant in.
And I think what you said is important. I want people to understand, we're not in the sinus when we're doing this. we are outside of the sinus because we haven't gone through the Snyderian membrane.
Snyderian membrane.
Did I say it?
Right. Now, we are in the sinus cavity, but the sinus itself is a tissue-lined organ. And if you go in there, then you open the door to some other issues. I've actually had patients tell me, once we did the sinus lifts, that their sinuses felt better.
Right.
So what we do, and you ask the question, can you place the implant at the same time? If you have at least 4 millimeters of bone, and that is from the ridge or where the bone starts inside the mouth.
Where the tooth used to be.
Yeah, where the tooth used to be. And the bone inside, if there's 4 millimeters of bone, in some instances we can place the implant and do the sinus lift.
And the reason is you need a little bit of bone to engage at least, what, 3 or 4 threads of the implant.
Absolutely.
So that it stays where you put it.
Well, you're a good student, Doc. You need to come down to North Carolina, and we can get you placing implants on your patients in a few days.
Oh, actually, I already placed them. That's how I know this.
Oh, good.
I do the sinus lifting myself. But I think it's good to talk to other people around the country who also do it and have patients have a chance or listeners have a chance to ask their questions.
And the good news is there's two different ways you can do a sinus lift. One, you can do it by making a small opening right where the tooth used to be and doing what we call bump the sinus up. That's the simplest way.
Right.
And the other way, you have to actually open the bone or sinus window. That's one of the older ways of doing it. Most dentists are starting to edge towards doing a sinus bump technique because it's a lot less invasive, a lot less chance of getting an infection.
Right. I have both techniques. You're talking about, it's the Sidorakis technique?
The one that I use is by Dr. Chen. It's called the hydraulic sinus condensing. But the Sidorakis technique, you put the water in.
The saline, yeah.
Yeah.
Put saline in, and it pushes the membrane up, and then you inject the, with a bone syringe, you push the bone in. Of course, that one, there's always that question mark in your mind. Is the membrane still intact? And sometimes you don't know until later.
Right. And you know, you can take an x-ray and check. But here's what I can tell you. What I'll do is most dentists will use the human bone grafting material, but I'll also mix in, another substance called beta calcium triphosphate, which shows up on the x-ray. So if you do the sinus lift and you shoot an x-ray, and you see bone grafting material floating around in the sinus, then you know maybe you got a hole.
Right.
It's hard, though.
We need to go to a break, and I have many, many more questions, as you can imagine, for you. So we'll be back here in just a minute. You're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS. We'll be right back.
Keep smiling at trouble.
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and with me on the phone as my guest today is Dr. Andrew Kelly. Dr. Kelly practices in North Carolina. He is an implant and cosmetic dentist. I assume he does all kinds of things as well, but his focus and love is implant and cosmetic dentistry. And so what we're doing is talking about primarily about implants and the placement and that sort of thing. Before we get back to questions for Dr. Kelly, let me just say that we have a couple emailed guesses to our question of the day, which was what percent of all U.S. dentists offer nitrous oxide sedation? Stephanie sent in an email of 62% as her guess, and Alberto, 48%. None of these are correct so far. We will keep taking your guesses, either by email or phone, and the number is 821-1230. And if you have a question for Dr. Kelly, feel free to give us a call. Also, I want people to know that this broadcast and all of the other shows that we have done are available by podcast at www.talk1230wyts.com. And if you go there, just hold your mouse over the on-air button. A list of names that are on the air will pop up. Go down to click on Dr. Kvitko. And if you just scroll down a little bit below where you'll see the pictures of the polar bear root canal that was done by Dr. Klein at the Pittsburgh, the veterinarian that we had on our show, you'll see where it says click here to go to podcast page. All right, so Dr. Kelly, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is you talked about placing the implant the same day the sinus lift was done. In the case of an open sinus lift, and this is where a hole is made in the side of the bone to get at the membrane, push the membrane away.
Yep.
When you place the implant itself, do you use external lubrication for the implant drill, or do you allow the drill, the saline, to be spinning around inside the floor of that sinus, but below the membrane?
I use external and internal, so that way the saline is in there. And it's, but the good news is we're not in the membrane. All we are is like between the bone and the membrane, so that saline actually washes away any, you know, blood or loose debris that's in there. So it's actually a good thing.
Just kind of cleans up the whole area.
Yes.
And that membrane, for the listeners, it's think of a balloon, an inflated balloon, and when we carefully poke through the bone, a lot like an eggshell can be cracked without piercing that membrane, except the difference between an eggshell and a human sinus is when we push that bone in, it pushes back because it's pressurized. And that makes it very easy to do, basically, because we know right where it is and we can push it off. So... But you prefer the closed implant, the closed sinus lift whenever possible?
Absolutely, I do.
Okay.
It's because it's less invasive to the patient, and I've gotten the technique down to the point where I can raise that sinus membrane anywhere from 7 to 10 millimeters and still get an implant in there a sufficient length.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is a lot of my patients are able to go back to work the next day when I do it that way.
Okay.
And what we do, and everything that we do as dentists, is for the benefit of the patient.
Right. Now, single teeth, I understand it's almost always closed when possible, but what if maybe the person has no teeth on, say, their upper right from their cusp of their pointed corner tooth on back? Would you do an open sinus lift in that case?
In some cases, we can still do the closed technique. But
okay.
Typically, when you have multiple teeth missing, you typically have to go in and do an open sinus elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And they are becoming less risky now because the biggest risk of doing the open sinus elevations is tearing that membrane. But now with the newer technology, we have some technology called piezo surgery.
Yes.
With piezo surgery, the tearing rate or the cutting rate of the Snyderian membrane in the open technique has gone down from about 25% to about 3%. So,
wow, that's pretty good. And these are little instruments that just gently make this cut in the bone, but not all the way through the bone, so that you just kind of tap that last little bit through?
Basically... I'll tell you, piezo surgery, I hope all the listeners have had their teeth cleaned. And you know,
yes.
The little thing, the Cavitron thing that they use, that is an ultrasonic tooth cleaner. Well, if you put more power on that, that same ultrasonic energy will also cut bone, but it will not cut soft tissue. So you can actually put the cutting instrument on the soft tissue and it won't cut it, but it will cut bone very effectively. So we're starting to use the piezo surgery unit.
Wow, that's very neat.
Mm-hmm.
That's very neat. We are going to be having to go to a break here soon, so I'm going to ask you a question or two, and I might have you just contemplate your answer before actually answering, so we don't run long with the commercial. So what I want you to be ready to answer, if you will, when we come back from our break is the cone beam technology, the CT technology, and how it's being used in dentistry. And I know you either use an ICAT or you have access to an ICAT. I mean, you either own one or have access to one. And it's pretty neat stuff. And I think a lot of what we've been saying today might be scary for people when they hear, you know, cutting bone, worried about the membrane, all that. And so I think that maybe if I haven't already turned off some listeners who are now afraid to ever look into an implant, we can maybe soothe their minds a little bit by talking about this cone beam CT technology when we come back from the break. So you're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thanks for joining me, and hang with us because we'll be right back after the break.
Just smile, please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go.
Talk 1230. 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. Those of you that know me know that that's one of my favorite songs. I guess I'm just a sucker for happy songs. It's 16 minutes before 10 o'clock here on Sunday morning. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but Were Too Numb to Ask. And today we're discussing dental implants. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Kelly from North Carolina. I believe it's Cummins, North Carolina, or maybe I said that wrong. I'll get him to correct me here in just a second. Hey, Dr. Kelly, I gave you a question to be ready to answer when we come back from the break, but what I'd like to do, if it's all right with you, is take a caller that we have because they were on hold during the break.
Sure.
So let's go to Bill. Bill, what's your question for Dr. Kelly?
Sir, I actually got two questions now because right when you left, you were talking about the comb beams. I was just curious, who do you prefer out of all the current manufacturers like iCAD or Galileos or maybe the one by Plan Mecca?
I'll tell you what, there's so many, you sound pretty knowledgeable about it, you might sell them for a living, I'm not sure, but anyway, and Dr. Kelly, I think I want to get your opinion. I've looked at the iCAD, I've looked at the Galileos, the other one, and honestly, it almost seems to me it depends on who you talk to, but what's your thought?
There's a lot of controversy about which one's best and which one works. Here's what I'll tell you, they all provide the same type of technology, and you got to decide what works in your hands and your practice. I personally own an iCAD.
Okay.
In my opinion, you get, at when I bought it, and this is, I've had it for 2 years, when I bought it, it provided the best views, and you had a wider angle of view. But now, the others have, the others have come, and they've changed. It's like, for instance, if you remember back in, the 70s, they used to have 8-track tape players, or 8-tracks in cars. Well, I don't know who came out with the cassette first, but trust me, the other automakers didn't sit around on their hands while the other guy was using, cassette and continue to sell 8-track.
Right.
So they all are very similar. The Galileos, for instance, has its own software for placing implants, and that's good and bad, and there are a number of reasons that you choose a system, but I wouldn't choose it based on what the salesperson told me. I'd choose it based on my research and what my needs are.
Right, and I guess really what it comes down to is the resolution.
Yes.
How accurate, to what degree can you count on that, on the result. And
right.
So you have an iCAD, you still stand behind the iCAD, and
yep.
It would be, if I were asking you which one to buy, you would say an iCAD.
Probably so.
Okay, Bill, what was your other question? And keeping in mind, I don't think we've explained this cone beam stuff yet, but go ahead and ask your question, and we will get to that.
I understand. It's a completely different subject now. A couple years ago, I had pretty much most of my wisdom teeth removed, and one of them was Impact, I believe it's called,
mm-hmm.
And I was just curious if I should pay attention to that and maybe get a bone graft someday, or if it's not needed, don't worry about it. Because I am not really suffering any pain or anything. I was just curious if I should look out for that.
This is a wisdom tooth was removed, and at the time, bone grafting was not done. And you're wondering, do you need to have somebody go back in and put bone there?
That's correct, sir. Maybe just take a look to make sure that it's not being missed, or does that pretty much come out?
Is it an upper or lower?
I believe it was an upper, sir.
All right. Okay. Well, Dr. Kelly, I know what my answer would be, but go ahead, tell us
my
what you would
My answer is no, I don't think you need to worry about it.
Right, because it's so far in the back, and you probably don't need an implant back there that far.
Right.
If it
I
had
wouldn't
been
even suggest trying to put an implant back there, I'd say it'll be fine.
Yeah. And when you said you wouldn't even suggest trying to put an implant, that's because honestly, you can't get the implant drill back there far enough. It's hard to get people to open that wide.
It's pretty hard.
And then before we let Bill go, Bill, what's your guess? Or did I ask you that yet? No, I don't think I did. What's your guess?
While I was on break, I kind of cheated and I Googled it. So.
Okay, well then, why don't you give us the answer of the day then? The answer to the question of the day.
It's what I found, which could be wrong, is 1/3.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yes. Warm, very warm.
Why don't we go ahead and give the answer right now. The answer to the question of the day, and the question was, what percent of all U.S. dentists offer nitrous oxide sedation? According to Dr. Kelly's website, it's 35%. And so I think Bill came up with 33 1/3, so... I think that's pretty darn close.
I think so.
We have an agreement. And I'm surprised by that. I'm very surprised by that.
I was very surprised when I did the research to put it on there. I was like, goodness, I mean, only 33%.
Yeah, I think that's bad. We might talk about that a little bit. We do have to go to another break. And it's kind of seeming to me like I'm gonna invite you back. Are you able to come back on another day? Because I'm not even scratching the surface of the questions I'd like to ask you.
Absolutely, I can come back. I'm having such fun.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to go to a break. We do have about 5 more minutes when we come back, and so we'll have a few more things that we can cover. But you're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and we'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. And today we're talking about implants with Dr. Andrew Kelly from Clemens, North Carolina. I think I gave the wrong city there earlier. And Dr. Kelly's email address, not email, but website is www.ncdentalimplants.com. And no, it doesn't stand for No Charge Dental Implants. It stands for North Carolina Dental Implants. But Dr. Kelly, we wanted to talk about the cone beam technology. And on your website, if you go to the technology, as you know, page 2 of 3, you have a picture there, kind of an explanation of this technology. And
yep.
I'm sure you're familiar with it. But we are talking about dental implants, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, just
yeah, we don't work below the neck. You know?
Look at the picture you have there on page 2 of your technology, just for fun, when you get a moment. But anyway, and anyone else as well, you know, wants to go to Dr. Kelly's website. Again, that's ncdentalimplants.com. So, in about 4 minutes or less, and I hate to do that to you. Can you just explain what cone beam technology is, and then maybe when we have you back, we can go into some more detail?
Cone beam technology is a technology that uses a beam, an electronic beam, and it actually passes through a structure, and it's picked up on a plate behind the subject or the patient. And that information is read and turned into a digital image, and it's processed, and that what would be a two-dimensional image can then be transformed into a three-dimensional image. And as dentists, we can use that information to digitally place implants in precise positions. So once that's done, that information can be emailed to a center, and that we can get precision drill guides that allow us, well, basically what they do is, they allow us to place implants in very precise positions as a result of that 3D information that we gathered from the cone beam CT.
It's very cool stuff because it creates this virtual model. It allows us, I believe it's, is it 1/4 millimeter?
Yes.
Within 1/4 millimeter of accuracy. And so it takes away the guesswork when it comes to, are we going to touch the nerve when we place an implant? Are we going to go into the sinus when we place an implant? We know all this before we ever start, and things are planned around potential problems. And that's how we know if we have to lift a sinus. It's how we know to use maybe a 9 millimeter implant instead of an 11. And by the way, I do the Camlog system, and I know in reading your bio that that's one of the techniques or the systems that you use as well.
Absolutely, I love Camlog. The reason that I like Camlog is because, especially for people just getting started, mm-hmm. it has some safeguards in that system that help prevent problems. Like there are drill stops on each drill, so.
Is that what those are for? I usually take them off.
Ah!
No, I'm just playing with you.
Yeah, there are drill stops on each drill. Which, you know.
I had them worried there for a minute.
It takes out the oops factor.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I like that system. I do use other systems. I am a diplomat of ABOI, so I kind of get a lot of stuff coming through the door. So it's kind of like a master mechanic. You don't know what's going to walk in the door, so all tools don't fit for every situation. So you have, when you start doing multiple implants and you know, trying to fix other stuff that's been there, mm-hmm. You'll find out that you end up with three, sometimes four systems.
Yeah, now the ABOI, for our listeners, is the American Board of Oral Implantology. Is that correct, Dr.
Yes.
Kelly? Okay. Sometimes we fall into our jargon and forget.
I'm sorry.
No, hey, no problem. I don't know what a lot of the jargon is on the web, you know, the little things that people write at the end of their emails. So I'm a little bit deficient there. Boy, that's taken us right up to the end of the show, so I do appreciate that you're willing to come back, because I definitely want to have you back. And we'll just expand on this, because this is the up and coming thing, I believe. If it were up to me, I would have an implant instead of a bridge or a partial.
Yes.
And I know you agree with that. So
absolutely, I do.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 9 to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Thank you so much for listening this week, and have a wonderful Christmas, because I won't be on the air again till after Christmas. Everybody, go out, get your final shopping done, and stay warm.